From the Lem de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 12th day of December, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. I'll bring you up to speed on the ag news for the afternoon, and we'll hear from Jonathan Kappas, agricultural policy specialist, about the chances for a farm bill and what kinds of things are included in a farm bill. Then we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, as we wrap up our time together. We'll be joined by Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.43.5, down 4.75. May 4.5, lower at $4.51. December new crop down 2.25 at $4.41.75. January beans $9.95.75, up 0.25. The March at $10.03.25, half higher. And November of next year down 0.5 at $10.14. Bean meal $1.60 lower. The bean oil up 23 cents. Wheat futures soft red in the March, down 4.75. And the hard red at 5.62 3/4, 4.5 cents lower. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us. Hi, Matt. Thank you for taking some time with us today. Let's get right into this. First, thank you for being at the iHotel tomorrow. You're doing double duty. You're doing the CCA conference as well as the Farm Assets Conference. Lisa Martin and I both thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule for that. What will you be telling those audiences for the day?
Well, I mean, you know, we're going to go over this USDA report from this week. I mean, clearly the 200 million bushel increase in demand was a welcome sign. I don't think any of us expected it necessarily in December, although we felt like there was enough reason that they should make some demand adjustments. Now, USDA historically doesn't make supply adjustments. It's more along the line of demand. So last time they changed production, I believe, is over 20 years ago in that December report. But you look at demand adjustments, and they're a little more common. So they came in, of course, and took ethanol up 50, exports up 150. I thought ethanol was a touch rich, but there's no doubt grind's been awful good. But, you know, last week was a 4% drop off the high grind, whereas this week was very similar to a week ago. So, you know, we're continuing to hear about a little bit of slowdowns as far as, you know, profit margins don't look as hot. But we think USDA is probably right on target as far as their export numbers. Now, I know there's a lot of talk about, front loading. We'll talk about all that stuff, though, and then how it kind of factors into how we might want to look at cash sales. You know, there are some trends as far as basis. You know, we've seen some weakening here this week, which would make sense. You know, I mean, we went up and tested that moving average on March corn. We sure didn't get through it. You know, it tried, but we'll look at that as well. We'll go over some charts. So I think there's plenty to talk about this week.
Yeah, farmers this week were making cash sales as best I could tell. I believe the ag market team is actually in favor of doing such when you're in an area like we were earlier in the week.
Oh, for sure. And the reason that we were talking about it was, you know, when you factor in the, you know, that you were going to go up and test this moving average, I mean, the 200-day moving average has only been traded to or above about six times since October of 23. And so clearly it's been a wall, an absolute wall to try to get through. And so we were advising growers, hey, if you're, you know, most of you are looking at pretty darn good basis levels. What's the guarantee that there's going to be good basis levels once January contracts start rolling? Probably not very good. And so, you know, we were recommending to at least step in there and do something. We knew some growers that had offers at 440, to be totally honest about it. But, you know, we were telling them if you did get 450 or above, that you should step in and do something with it. And by all means, that's exactly what happened. Now, you're only here at 4.43 3/4 now. You know, I mean, you're down off that high just a little bit. But at the same time, this is a heck of a lot better than what we were looking at for the bulk of harvest time. So we've got to keep things, you know, in perspective there.
What are you thinking about as it relates to the soybean market today?
Oh, boy, I don't know, Todd. The soybean market is just a tough one. Obviously, the report the other day precipitated a nice little rally in corn, but beans just couldn't join in. I mean, there was no adjustments for soybeans other than Argentine production went up a million tons. But, you know, the bottom line on this bean market is that you've got a lot of supply. Now, exports have been pretty good. Crush has been good. But as you look forward, if Brazil has anywhere near the crop size that they're being forecasted to get, you're going to struggle mightily to get U.S. exports and shipments to do much of anything, you know, once you get out past, I don't know, 1st of February. They got that plant, crop plan in a very timely fashion, and so they should be able to have beans available and ready to ship a little earlier than normal. Not much, but a little bit earlier than normal. And with that being the case, we don't really expect, especially, you know, with this dollar versus real type discussion, you know, we've been running about a 22-year low as far as how cheap the real is versus the dollar. And that clearly is going to make them very competitive out there on the world market. We've heard quite a bit about basis levels tanking, you know, for, you know, some of the Brazilian growers. And I think that maybe that's a little bit evidence that, you know, they're still going to be able to be quite competitive, you know, and that maybe some of the folks down there that are in the export game, you know, are trying to make things look a little better for themselves anyway.
November was a record-setting month for crush in the United States. What do you think December will look like?
You know, I think the crush is still going to be awfully strong. Actually, crush margins dipped quite a bit whenever you look at Central Illinois crush, and I just had this pulled up, but when you look at Central Illinois crush, you know, just for instance, back here at the end of November, we were down here under a dollar, and that's the first time this marketing year that we had been there. But then, you know, we kind of bounced. And so it's been nice to see this crush margin back over a dollar, maybe $1.10 or so. But as far as Central Illinois is concerned, I think you're still going to, and most places are going to be reflective of that. But that's where we always look at it. We look at all, you know, cash values for beans, bean meal, and bean oil. And so, you know, essentially, I've got to think moving forward, you're still going to see good crush. But at the same time, right now with beans where they're at, I'll tell you what, it's you're going to need it, Todd, because the tough thing, you know, whenever you look out at this bean meal, I mean, you know, if you want to get depressed, you know, talk about soybean meal, because it's just a rough market. I mean, you look, nothing has happened in this bean meal market to speak of. And since really about mid-November, it's just been a very narrow range, languishing around down here at basically COVID lows, you know, and so we really need to see something happen there. Maybe Argentina could trend drier at some point, but there's just no weather story right now that we can hang our hat on.
We'll look forward to hearing more from you tomorrow at the Farm Assets Conference.
Yeah, I look forward to being there.
Indeed. That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed listing the monarch butterfly as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. The president of the National Corn Growers Association, Kenny Hartman Jr., says it looks forward to providing input on protecting monarch butterflies without disrupting critical agricultural activities that help feed and fuel the world. Farm Bureau President, for his part, Zippy Duval, says preserving the natural surroundings for America's wildlife has long been a priority for America's farmers and ranchers, and he says the use of a 4D rule acknowledges the work farmers are already doing to protect the monarch while recognizing the need for flexibility in conservation efforts. Elsewhere, the food price index averaged 127.5 points in November. That's up a half a percentage point from the October level and reaching its highest value since April of 2023. The increase was driven by higher price quotations for dairy products and vegetable oil, which slightly outweighed declines in the meat, cereals, and sugar indexes. The index was 5.7% higher than its corresponding value in November of last year. The number is also 21% below its peak of 160.2 points reached in March of 2022. Now, the cereal price index has down about 3 percentage points from October. The vegetable price index took the biggest jump. It was up 11.5 points or thereabouts, and the FAO dairy price index at 140 points, roughly, was up just under a full point from October. The meat price index averaged 118 points in November. That's down about a point from the October number. And finally, the sugar price index averaged 126.4 points, down 3.1 over the last month. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention now to the Farm Bill. We're joined by Jonathan Kappas. He's an agricultural policy specialist with the FarmDoc team in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, and will be making a presentation during tomorrow's Farm Assets Conference. By the way, you can still come if you'd like. Walk-ins are welcome. The cost is $100, but if you're going to come, do visit willag.org online, hit Farm Assets Conference, and fill out the registration before you come, because either way, you get to fill that registration out online, whether you walk in and do it at the time on your phone or you do it ahead of time on something a little easier to use. Now, let's turn our attention to Jonathan. I asked him about this farm bill.
Yeah, I mean, the farm bill is just a massive piece of legislation that every 5 years, Congress is supposed to reauthorize a whole slew of things in the food and agricultural space. So like you mentioned, this is where we help farmers manage risks, deal with natural resource challenges. This is where we help low-income households and families put food on the table when they're struggling to make ends meet. We invest in rural communities and economic development. We also authorize all the research and extension work that does or reauthorize that research and extension work at places like the University of Illinois and across the country. So it's an incredibly big and complex legislative undertaking. As you can imagine, it takes Congress quite a while to work through it. Congress has been struggling to get through these in recent times, and certainly this current reauthorization effort is a third example in a row of the struggle of getting it done. So it raises concerns. You know, when we think about the investment, we think about the need out there and keeping these programs funded and operational. And so there's a lot to it. And I think, you know, again, we can maybe get a little too complacent about our food system because, you know, we have such abundance in this country. We have a lot of access for most people to a lot of food, but there's some real challenges in keeping that going. And so I think thinking through how our food system works, what are the risks, how do we keep things functioning for as many of us as possible, is a big challenge.
Over the past several months, I've been working on some programs related to rural development and food and feeding programs. I'm hoping that you can put these into some context for me as it's related to the Farm Bill and the two different sides, particularly the food and feeding programs and their importance.
Yeah, and this is one of the challenges we're seeing with this issue, which is the sheer need that's out there, whether it's in a small town or a big city. Latest numbers, we have over 40 million Americans on average every month are getting food assistance through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And that is an enormous amount. And if you think about, you know, even with the economic challenges we've had, even with the inflation challenges, but you think about a nation where the unemployment rates are low, and wages have gone up, that many people every month are struggling to make ends meet and put food on the table. And that's a huge issue that, frankly, in my opinion, doesn't get talked about enough or focused enough on in the policy discussions. And part of it, not to pick on your question, part of it is comes back to that question, because we look at the Farm Bill and we see, oh, look, 80% of all the dollars spent in a Farm Bill are spent on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and only about 20% roughly are spent directly on farmers. And I fear that we've gotten so wrapped around this sort of budget type look, or how many billions of dollars are spent on this, that we're missing the number of people on the other end of the policy and how important and how much that impacts their lives. And so, yes, it is 80% of the spending, but there are 40 million every month getting benefits from that, which is vastly larger than any other population served in that bill. And again, it's a it is a reminder that there's some real challenges in our economy and our food system that we're not addressing. And we're, you know, when people are in that position, that, that is, that's tough. I mean, I don't, you know, you're managing kids that need to eat, you know, you might be managing an elderly parent that needs to eat. And so it is a huge and difficult issue. And I think, look, there's no doubt the program costs a lot of money on the federal side. I mean, we're talking upwards of $120 billion a year. But again, we're serving every month over 40 million Americans. So it's tough. The other 20% goes to farmers. We split that really between direct subsidies, conservation assistance, and crop insurance. And so there's basically three kind of major avenues for that farmers get out of that 20%. And, you know, nobody really has a great handle on exactly how many farmers are benefiting from that. You know, USDA and the census will count about 1.92 million farmers nationwide. But I think it's, you know, widely understood to be a number that's a lot higher than the actual people who are farming, in sort of a commercial way or in the sense of what we would think about where that's your livelihood or a major part of your livelihood. We have a lot of, you know, we count a lot of smaller operations or something that might just be a farm on the side where you're not, you know, relying on that. So it's probably half of that, if even that many that are receiving the benefits that are farming as an occupation or as their main occupation.
Finally, and this is most assuredly not a new insight, but it seems unlikely that a farm bill that does not include the food and feeding programs could be passed through Congress.
Well, that's been our understanding of it for roughly 50 years now. Since 1973 is really when the food assistance programs, then food stamps, were added directly into the farm bill, and it's been a big part of it. So that's the vote counting, right? You've got to get 216 in the House. You've got to get 60 senators to vote to move anything. And so to clear that kind of legislative vote counting hurdle, you need a broad coalition of interests, of people who care about the bill or have a reason to care about it for their constituents and their part of the country. So it is a big, it has been a big part of making it successful. You may hear some hesitancy in my answer to that. And part of it is the reality that what we've seen the last now three attempts at reauthorization, in which we've actually seen the coalition torn apart in the House of Representatives in particular, with some pretty intense partisan fighting over the SNAP program. And, you know, I don't have a change in how I view this. And I think the vote counting is still the vote counting, but we've certainly seen a scenario in which these issues over the food assistance programs have really created barriers to getting a bill done. And, you know, the current farm bill reauthorization process, like I said, is third straight time we've seen this. And we're sitting here at the end of 2024 and they still haven't reauthorized the bill. And a big part of it has been just this kind of impasse around, and I'm not discounting the fact that it is a large program that spends a lot of money every year, but it has really become a barrier for the kind of bipartisanship, the kind of functional legislative work that we need to see done to get something like a farm bill through. You know, I don't know where that leaves us. I don't know how that, you know, how that shakes out, and I think we're going to see a rather interesting re-engagement with this in the new Congress.
If you'd like to see and hear more from Jonathan Kappas, you can do that tomorrow at the Farm Assets Conference right here in Champaign. It takes place at the I Hotel, and we open our doors at 7:30 a.m. You can still walk in. The cost is $100, but do fill out the registration form before you come. You can do that online at willag.org, or if you're in other parts of the state, I'll be on the road with Jonathan for the Illinois Farm Economics Summits next week. We'll be in Mount Vernon on Monday, Tuesday in East Peoria, and on Wednesday in DeKalb. Again, you can sign up for each of those, also $100, on our website at willag.org. Let's check some of the global growing regions now. Mike Tenure is here. He's the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hello, Mike. Thanks for being with us again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd.
I'd like to stay in South America today, though I'm not sure there's much of a story other than things look really pretty good so far. Can you begin maybe at the start of their season? It wasn't great. Things kicked off much better then, and give me an update of what's happening now.
Well, what's really the most important for Brazil soybeans is what's happening now. The key periods of development basically start in late November and then continue into February. You could argue that their weather stays pretty important into March and April in some of the northern areas, and even some of the southern areas where they grow a longer variety of corn. But all that said, the key period is basically underway at the moment. They've had pretty fantastic rains to this point in time. It is drying a little bit in the north, and it is a little bit too wet in the south. But as we look at the forecast, we can see that a number of cool fronts are going to move through each of these regions going forward. Over the next 2 weeks, that will produce near and above normal rainfall in all of these soybean areas. Now, the areas that will be the wettest are the ones that are currently the driest, and the ones that will receive the lower totals are the ones that don't really need a whole lot more rain. So when you put all that together, it certainly looks like we're looking at a pretty ideal setup for Brazil soybeans, at least over the next couple of weeks.
Anything different further to the south when you get through Paraguay and Argentina?
Well, Paraguay would certainly be lumped into that same story, so they're also looking really nice. As we move into Argentina, it's been a great setup so far with some pretty nice rains back in November. It has been drying out a little bit in recent weeks, and that drying trend is going to continue. So it's not quite as ideal in Argentina, but Todd, you need to keep a couple of things in mind. Number one, they're still planting corn and soybeans, so this is pretty early in the season to be thinking too much about dryness. Number two is that it will be a little bit of a concern for some of the early planted corn that took place back in October. So all of that put together, maybe the situation in Argentina isn't ideal, but it's still pretty early. And one thing we did not talk about is the temperatures. It's been very cool across Argentina over the last couple of weeks. And even going forward through the end of the month, there's no signs of heat anywhere in the future. So it'll stay normal to cool. So okay soil moisture now, maybe a little bit dry going forward, but then no heat. And that's not a big recipe for a major concern. And Todd, we also want to talk about the temperatures in Brazil. We didn't zone in on that too much, but it's also looking pretty cool by their standards going forward, especially in the southern areas. So all this just points to us that there's not very many concerns for corn or soybeans, and maybe it might even be going to the other side with things looking pretty good.
Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, that sounds great, Todd.
It does indeed. That's Mike Tenure. He is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. I hope to see you tomorrow or maybe Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday for the Farm Assets or the Illinois Farm Economics Summit Series and Conferences. On the road, you can always sign up and walk in for any of those. Right now, you can do that at willag.org, willag.org. You have a good afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.